Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. I'm Mike Pongiorno. I'm joined today again by... I always go, do I say with or by? But it's by. By.
Yeah, joined by. Joined You're doing by, that with Anthony in the last one.
Joined by Janine Gagliardi. Mm-hmm. J9 is your robot name.
That's right. Did I ever tell you that when I was a nanny, I wanted to like play a long con on the kids that I was watching and like bring in my lunch and like it would be batteries and like have like an exposed like thing on my back that looked like a power source of some kind. That's and amazing. Like convince them that I was a robot and that my name was actually J9. I never did it because who has the time, but it would have been a good one.
That would have been amazing. That would have been wonderful
for no one's enjoyment but my own
and the babies. I've always wanted to, on the last day of class, hire an actor to play like a custodian, and like when the students come, he'll be sweeping, and they're like, "Where's Professor Buongiorno?" And then he could be like, "Professor Buongiorno, well, he died 30 years ago."
Oh my god!
So they think
god.
The whole semester I've been
a ghost. Oh my god!
Yeah, I so want to do that.
You should get like a picture of yourself. Like you should go down to the Jersey Shore and like take a picture of yourself in old-timey clothing.
Even though I make contemporary references in every class, still
and then, like put it up somewhere in the department.
Hopefully the students would just enjoy the bit.
It's just like you're from a saloon.
The commitment to the bit. So today we're talking about the Netflix series Love, Death, and Robots, mm-hmm. or Love, Death plus Robots,
because right.
it does the Romeo plus Juliet thing.
Mm-hmm.
It is a science fiction show. It's mm-hmm. an animated show. They're short. Sometimes they're like 6 minutes. Sometimes
that's
like
the
18
shortest
minutes.
One. I think. Yeah.
I think the longest is 18.
Uh-huh. Which one is that? Do you
I think
remember?
That's Beyond the
Akilarift.
Akilarift. Okay. Right. Which is also a short story, which I want to read now.
Yeah.
I love this show.
Mm-hmm.
I love science fiction. I love animation. Bold hot take, bold statement / hot take. There's a lot of great sci-fi novels, but I think short fiction is the perfect medium for sci-fi.
I completely agree.
Sci-fi lives in short fiction.
I love it.
And I think animation is better as shorts. There's great animated features. So I think a series of short animated sci-fi, it's perfect. Like I watched it twice. I watched it once. I would do seven. I would do like just a couple
mm-hmm.
so I could digest them.
Yeah.
And then I go back. And then today, in preparation, I watched them all again.
Yeah.
But the watching the series feels like reading a short story collection of sci-fi.
Anthology, yeah.
It's just like, this one's going to be this and this one's going to be that.
Yeah.
It's just so, I love it.
It's like the barest of threads that's linking them all, which is, I guess, the love, death, and robots. But really, it's like... some
there's a theme
some
of
website cats are in a lot
cats
of them
are, there's yeah. cats are right there in the vampire one the vampires are
yeah.
afraid of cats
yeah.
there's the
cats at the end of Robots
right in Good Hunt the girl Yen turns into a rat into a cat.
I thought she was a fox.
I thought she was a cat because I thought it was like
it was definitely like a
feline,
like a foxy cat or something
yeah because she's she becomes a sex worker, but
yeah.
before she's more of like
she remind well because her mother in that one reminds me of the Pokemon. Like,
oh, Eevee,
Ninetales.
Oh yes. Yeah.
And that's like there's a tradition of fox people in.
Oh, maybe you're right.
Like folklore.
Oh, okay,
like East Asian folklore.
I probably okay. Now that makes a lot of sense. That's an interesting one. I kind of want to go through them all. We don't have to talk at length about all mm-hmm. of them. Some of them are not good.
You want to go in order? Well, that's what I was saying to you. It's like the best thing about this series is even if it's like not a great one.
Yeah.
Then there's some clunkers that come to mind. It's every style of animation is so
yes.
different and so beautiful.
Yeah.
So at least you're looking at something that's like gorgeous to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go in the order that I saw them.
I think it's the same one. as the order that I watched it.
Yeah, there's four different orders. Sunny's Edge. Yeah.
Yeah, the same one.
There's four different orders, which this is a weird Netflix thing. Well, we've known for years that Netflix gives us different thumbnails based on what we click on. Mm. So they try to get us to click on things.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
But this was, because it's an anthology, there were different orders of episodes based on... And I don't know how that algorithm works.
Yeah. It worked. I mean, I watched the whole thing and so did you, I guess.
So, yeah. Sunny's Edge is the first one. I also wrote down at the beginning of every short, you see sort of a, it almost looks like a rotating analog clock, and you see, or like a slot machine, and you see three symbols. Mm-hmm. So I wrote down the symbols for every,
really?
For every animation. Okay. And it usually indicates something that's going to be in the show.
Okay.
So for Sunny's Edge, it's a heart, an X, and then a snake.
Okay. So is that like the beast, the monster that she...
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That one reminded me a lot of like Pacific Rim.
Oh, yeah. All right, let's say this. Mm-hmm. This is us really talking about all of the shows and the themes and the stories. So if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it and then come back and listen.
Yeah, because it's probably going to be spoiler heavy. Because there's twists and turns and like a lot of them.
And I want to talk about all of it. Mm-hmm.
That one, Sunny's Edge, stayed with me.
Sunny's Edge is a cyberpunky dystopian future, and Sunny is a fighter, and it's an arena where you've got two monsters, but the monsters are linked to pilots who are humans that are driving
like
the monsters,
psychically connected to them.
And this creepy old man wants to pay her to take a dive, and she refuses to do it. Mm-hmm. And we find out her backstory that she was raped and
brutally attacked.
She's got scars all over.
Yeah.
And we have a really intense, awesome fight scene.
Oh, it's so good.
Where Sunny wins, and then after, the girlfriend of the rich old dude, who's the evil man, comes in, like, they start hooking up and whatever, but then
she was a robot, she had to be, right? Because she has the claws.
Yeah, these claws come out of her hand, Wolverine style, and impale her.
Yeah.
But we find out that Sunny actually is the monster.
Right.
Or her sentience is living in the monster.
She controls the human body. Right.
So you think she's dead at first.
She says, they didn't actually leave anything of me when they attacked me.
Yeah.
Just my consciousness. And so they transferred it to this monster. And that's why I always win. Because she always wins.
That's
and
Sunny's
she says,
edge.
I'm fighting for my life every time I get in the ring.
Right. Fear is her edge.
Yeah.
The animation is good, although it looks... There's a couple of shorts in the series that look like just good PS4 games.
Yeah.
And this...
Like the werewolf one?
This one did. Yes.
I love the glow-in-the-dark stuff, like the like neon stuff in this episode.
Yes. It's super cyberpunky. It's super like... Yeah, I loved it. It's a good place to start.
Everyone has like the best haircut too.
Oh yeah. I guess this would be a good place to bring this up. I'm not a prude yet.
I was just going to preface me saying this as well, being like, listen, I'm not a prude.
But there's a lot of nudity that feels... I've seen pictures of nude people, okay? But the series has a lot of gratuitous nudity.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because these are people that spend most of their careers working on like kids stuff, so like
they just want to get it all
right out. They're like out of the gate, so they're like, oh, I'll just draw some dicks, and there is a good an equilibrium of dicks to boobs. It's not all female nudity, which is good, but a lot of times it's just like, we don't need this at all.
Yeah, it doesn't
right
serve
now.
The story at all. I mean, it is gratuitous in the truest sense of the word, where you're just like, oh, okay, there's just boobs.
This didn't need to be here at all.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like when HBO started as a network. The network runners were telling people who wanted to bring their shows there, like, you have to put nudity in it because we need something that's going to set us apart from TV.
Right. And so they had like sexy sitcoms.
Yeah,
and
for like no reason. Like there would just be like a crazy sex scene.
So the second one is Three Robots.
That was cute.
This is, I think, the funniest one.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the robots is he evolved from baby monitors.
Right.
One evolved from an Xbox. They don't call it Xbox.
Yeah.
But it's X something.
Yeah.
And then one is not humanoid. She looks like a pyramid.
Uh-huh.
And they're going through a post-apocalyptic world where you see like fossilized humans mm-hmm. everywhere.
And something, they're tourists.
Yeah, they're tourists.
Which is funny.
Yeah, they're all...
They're like taking pictures of everything.
Yeah. It actually begins with a clear homage to the beginning of Terminator where
one of the robots crushes a skull.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like an imposing robot, but then they like immediately crack a joke. And yeah. So you're like, oh, okay.
Cute music. And it's like, I actually found
reminded
this.
Reminded me of Wall-E.
Yeah. This one had a very Pixar feel to mm-hmm. it, to the look of it. I actually found this one slightly hopeful.
Okay.
Because the idea of, yes, we're all going to die, but like, then there'll be robots on like, I don't know, that makes me feel better about
like
my
something
death.
Something we made will outlive us.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of funny stuff about, like there's a scene where they're, like, they're in a diner, and they're talking about how humans ate, and, like, so they had an orifice, and they put food in their face orifice. Like, I don't understand it.
Like, it's disgusting. And they have, like, bones, and they, like, mash up the food with the bones.
Yeah. The funniest one is maybe the pyramid, because she speaks with a monotone, like, mm-hmm. voice. So, like, when she turns, she's always taking pictures of things. And she turns on the jukebox in the diner and she goes, show me what you've got, big boy. And just shit like that. There's the basketball scene where they find a basketball and like, what do they do with it? He dribbled it. And so he just kept hitting it. Mm-hmm. And then he drops it. And then the little one's like, that was amazing. They steal a Jesus Saves hat from mm-hmm. one of the dead truckers and just wearing it through the whole thing.
Like, what do you think happened to the people?
In that version.
Do they talk? Do they say anything?
They do. Our downfall was breeding cats with thumbs, which is something they really do.
Oh.
That's a real thing.
Well, because at the end, the cats are all.
Yeah. But we really are doing that.
Are we breeding cats with thumbs?
Yeah. It's not really opposable, but there is a common-ish defect with some cats where mm-hmm. they're born with another digit mm-hmm. and it looks like a thumb and mm-hmm. it's pretty cute and people like it so they've been breeding them to try to get them to have the cute thumb, but this story posits that will be our downfall.
Oh my god. You know, an evolutionary scientist was recently doing a talk, and now I can't of course remember the name, but someone asked like if another species on Earth is going to like make the evolutionary leap like humans do. What's the next like species that's going to like evolve that could potentially evolve to the point that humans are? And they said squirrels or raccoons because they have hands. They live among humans already. They live in urban centers. They've been able to survive among humans. They're problem solvers and they have all the like finger dexterity that they need.
That makes me so happy.
And then it reminds me of Rick and Morty also, because the squirrels.
Hello, little boy. Little boy. I kind of love that this one ends with that cats rule the world. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful
And now the robots are like their servants.
Yes. So the third one is The Witness. And this one is not good.
It's not good. It's pretty to look at.
And it's
That's
super
all you need to know.
What happens in this one?
A woman is looking out of her apartment. She sees a murder occur. And then the guy, the murderer, sees that she's watching. And he chases, and wants to stop her, I mm-hmm. guess. She runs out of her building. He chases her. He chases her to her job.
Which is at like a sort of leather club.
It's like a fetish club, I think.
Yeah.
This one is like the most gratuitous.
Right.
It's like...
Because she's like running away from a killer with her robe open.
Yeah, like completely naked, high heels in the street. And then she goes to her job and where she's like a performer.
Right.
That's where you get the line, "Get on stage.
You want to see some pussy?"
Yeah. So he follows her there.
Yeah.
The two characters that look like they're, I don't know, from The Matrix, but they also look like they're wearing like gas masks and like all pleather. Yeah. They're like rubbing up all over him and she's doing like a show.
Yeah.
And then runs out. But then it turns out like she ends up in the same situation as the murder that she originally witnessed.
Yeah.
But this time she's the murderer and she kills the guy. And then she looks out the window and the guy's looking at her from the other apartment building.
Right.
And so it just like repeats endlessly.
It's super predictable.
Yeah.
Mainly because in the beginning, you can see that the person that the guy kills looks just like her.
Just looks like her, yeah.
So you're like, well, I know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
It looks good. One of the people who worked on it worked on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Okay. So it kind of has that look. It's kind of like the human figures are sort of realistic looking, but there's a sort of shaky camera, unsteady focus. There's a lot of blue and pink hues that makes it look like it was filmed that was developed incorrectly or maybe purposely designed in a way.
Almost like that one reminded me of watercolors also.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
it's very pretty. And that's, I think, it's only saving grace. And it's also actually really pretty to look at.
It looks like either an Asian city or, you know, going back to something like Blade Runner, there's this sci-fi trope that eventually the major world power will be China. So
Did you see the original
America.
Ghost in the Shell?
Yes, of course.
It reminds me of that city.
Yes, yes. Right, even with like the red apartments and like the sort of, yeah. It was pretty. The nudity was gratuitous. And
you're going to be hearing that a lot.
The coupling of violence and sex together, I don't know, maybe I am old and prudish, but that feels irresponsible or wrong. I don't like that, you know? I read one review that said, I tried to stay away from reviews from this because I wanted like fresh ideas, but I read one review of this particular one and they said like, it feels like it's just an excuse to have a naked woman run screaming in fear.
Yeah.
So that one sucked. Suits is the next one.
I love this one.
This one has a sort of DreamWorks animation feel.
It
feels very warm and...
Bill said that it reminded him of like a computer game, like a LucasArts computer game from like the late 90s or the early 2000s.
Yeah. And the story is...
It's a very brightly colored.
Yeah. Yeah. We see like what looks like a farm. There's, you know, husband and wife. They're both a little thicker and he's drinking a mug of hot tea. And
no gratuitous nudity in this one.
No gratuitous
nudity. It's farmers. It's what we like here.
Right, right. It's very
wholesome.
Like...
Wholesome.
No, it's the perfect word for it. It's very wholesome.
It is, though. It's a good one.
And the story reminds me a lot of Starship Troopers. You have... it's a farm. And again, this one made me feel hopeful because it's like, I like the idea that in the future there'll be farming. Not factory farming.
Yeah.
But like...
And like homesteaders and like pioneers.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
Like folks who are still going out there and doing their thing.
And there she looks on her monitor and she's like, oh, there's a breach over here near the cattle. So
he
gets in his suit, which is like a mech suit, which is very like... Pacific Rim,
yeah.
And he goes to the breach.
But
the breach ends up being bigger than he expected, and all these bug-like creatures come in.
Very Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
I also love just, like, the mundane, or not the mundane, but, like, yeah, the sort of, like, homespun in juxtaposition with sci-fi.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, just, like, an old coffee cup, and she's, like, drinking and, like, looking out at, like, a cornfield.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, gigantic aliens. Like, I love that.
Yeah, like, you've got a shotgun. Mm-hmm. Someone has a shotgun, and then but someone's in a mech suit.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is the old lady with a cigar in her mouth.
Great.
She's the fucking best one. By the way, the symbols at the beginning of this episode are a coffee mug, a barn, and a cow's face.
Okay, I like that.
There's a sort of twangy, rustic music. Mm-hmm. It's very warm, but you know, the ending I think throws a real wrench in the gears and makes you rethink everything you just watched.
Yeah, because it's not an alien invasion,
right?
Like, they're the aliens,
right?
Which I think has been done a lot in sci-fi,
right?
But I still liked it.
I think the reason it shocked me was if it were a darker story I would have seen it, but it seems so nice and warm that the fact it ended with the idea of challenging the viewer to think, you know, like I said, all right, what happens is you zoom up from the farm, but you see, and you see like the wall that they breached, and you see all the bugs crawling over it, and then you go all the way back into space and you see that it's another planet, which is the bugs' planet, and there are like four or five of these little bubbles, which I guess humans have come and colonized.
Right.
So it makes you think about colonialism.
Yeah.
And because it was so sweet and nice, the fact that it ends with challenging you that way, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, and then you kind of feel for the bugs.
This is their fucking planet. Absolutely.
You know, I always wondered that, like when I learned about history. And I'd learn about like the pioneers or the people who came to settle in the Americas first. And I was like, would I have done that? Like, would I have been one of those people? And now it's like, you can actually ask yourself that for real, because people are going to go to Mars apparently. And I'm like, you know what the answer is? It's no, I'm not one of those people. I like the comfort of Earth. Yeah. I want to stay here. I'm not one of those. Pull yourselves up.
Yeah.
Make it work, people. I want to stay here.
As of now, if you can send the person to Mars, it's a death sentence. You're not coming back.
You're never coming back.
But do you do the Star Trek thing of go, I'm going to go further than any human's ever gone? And
you're
going to
be in the history books no matter what. If that's what you want, right, that's your ticket. Like, even if you die on the way there, your name will be recorded.
Right.
You know?
The best case scenario is you get there and then get the star there.
You get to starve to death there.
Run out of air.
Or, well, I mean, ideally, you'd create like a livable space, but you're going to die there no matter what. And you're going to die not in comfortable surroundings.
No, like, right. You're on.
That's it forever.
Right.
I don't know.
Maybe I do it. I'm afraid of elevators. So one time when I was a caterer, I catered a party that was like on a terrace at like one of the, actually it was a building across the street from Madison Square Garden. And it was so high up that I didn't even like going out with the hors d'oeuvres because I was just like being up there.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe I'm not going to
not go to space.
So the next is called Sucker of Souls. And this is one that's the vampire one.
Another great animation. I mean, they're all great animation.
Yeah, this one has a sort of
this reminds me of like early anime. But just like a specific type
it's
of anime.
Simple anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, whereas like
not overly detailed.
Exactly. Where the one we were just talking about with the fox woman, that feels like very Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
Where like this feels very like almost like maybe even TV anime.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple colors. It's got a very watercolory feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sort of simple sci-fi scenario of you've got a scientist and some mercenaries and they are on a archaeological dig, but wouldn't you know it, it's Dracula.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of vampires as like ancient beasts rather than humanoid things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's totally monstrous.
Yeah.
It reminded me, because you and Anthony were talking about Prometheus a couple episodes back, and it reminded me of the cave scenes in Prometheus.
Yeah. 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 It's scary. It actually had a genuine scare when Dracula first pops out.
Mm.
It's a jump scare, and it actually got me because I wasn't expecting it. Mm. I wasn't expecting that genre even. Like, I didn't think it was going to scare me.
What's the robot in this one?
I don't think there is one.
Okay.
I don't think everyone has love, death, or robots.
Yeah, I don't see the love.
This one again has cat in it. Vampires, if they eat cats, their skin burns. So they're afraid of a cat.
Yeah, they're afraid of a cat, which I thought was adorable. Because the cat's so cute.
Right, and you see the cat fucking another cat at one point. You also have the great line from the main mercenary. He's not the first man to get in a little trouble for eating pussy.
Yeah, it's a great joke. It's a good one.
Come on. Come on now, guys. But this one has a downer ending. It does.
Right, they're not going to get out of there.
They beat Dracula, and then they think they're out in. Well, they're still in the catacombs, but they think they're safe. And then they open a flare, and they see there are vampires everywhere, all over the ceiling. And then that's it.
That's all, folks.
But it was good. I really love the two Australian mercenaries that like work for the main mercenary. Mm-hmm. They're very funny together.
Yeah, there's a lot of comic relief. Like the archaeologist is like this little tiny guy that they're like running, like dragging behind them basically to keep up with the mercenaries.
Yeah, Dracula eats the grad student.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, the mercenary sees the blood on the other mercenary and like wipes it with her finger and goes, "This is a good look for you. Is this genuine Korean grad student?" They also do this effect twice in the episode where like when Dracula dies, he gets exploded. You see his head, and you see first his skin leave, and then his musculature, then his skull, then his brain.
Mm.
And the same thing happens when the grad student he's bisected.
Yeah.
He's cut down the middle, which the opening images, the symbols are a cat head, an X, and a bisected skull. And I really liked that look. I liked the... it's almost non-diegetic. Like, it's showing the audience like the innards of how this thing works.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really cool looking one. It's sort of short on, it's not a thinker. Some of these are thinkers, like any sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Some of them are thinkers. Some of them are like just fun little adventures. Yeah. But I would watch a whole show of this.
You know, I like wondered which ones I really wanted to see more of. Mm. This one, yeah, but I don't want it to end there. Like I want
more.
More of that story. Like I don't want the before, I want the after.
Yeah. The next one is When the Yogurt Took Over.
This one was silly. It was six minutes. This one's silly. It's fun. A little one.
It's the story of yogurt taking over. It's, of course, narrated by Maurice LaMarche, who does Brain from Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah.
But while he does that, that is an Orson Welles impression. Yeah. There are some funny things in this. It's sentient yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
Come and it speaks by like a bubble come up and you'll hear like them say things. At one point they say, "We want Ohio," and they give Ohio to the yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
They come up with a way to actually, when the yogurt first becomes sentient, the one scientist is putting it in her cereal, and in like cereal it writes, we solved fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Bring us to your leader. It's very funny, it's very cute, but the fact that it's narrated keeps the whole thing going very quick.
And isn't this the one that looks like almost like clay? Like it's
almost like a little Wallace and Gromit.
Mm-hmm.
I said they look almost like Muppet people because they've got like bulbous noses.
They do look like Muppets.
At one point, the yogurt takes over the White House, and the Oval Office is all white, and there's a framed picture of a raspberry and a framed picture of a Cheerio because they're yogurt. It's pretty cute.
They solve all the world's problems.
They come up with an economic plan that would work if we just completely did what they say, but we don't.
But we don't.
And then the economy falls.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun little one. Okay, Beyond the Aquila Rift.
Oh, man.
This one is, I think, the longest. This one's very meaty. Mm-hmm. This one also has a very sort of PlayStation 4 kind of realist aesthetic.
Very Uncanny Valley.
What is this one about?
So actually, I had to do a little reading about this also because I wasn't 100% clear on what actually happened to them initially. Yeah. So they put in coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using this program, and I can't remember the name of it. Do you have it written down?
But no.
It's so they're using this program to like navigate their ship out in space, and they're coming back from like a big like mission. And it's very much like the Nostromo in Alien.
It looks a lot like Nostromo.
Yeah. So it's like mining or whatever. I'm assuming mining. So they're going into like hypersleep.
Yeah. Which is, again, very aliens.
Yeah. And it looks exactly like those glass coffin-y things they have to get into. So they're going to be out for like a few years to get back home. When they wake up, they're greeted by this woman who like knows the main...
Right, Greta.
Someone
he hooked up with.
He hooked up with.
A couple years ago.
She works for something similar, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
She said that they overshot.
Yeah.
Where they were supposed to go. And, you know, it was going to take them a little while to get home. So why don't you come get acclimated and we'll figure out how to get you back. His two companions. One of them is never taken out.
Yeah.
The other one is a Susie. Female. Susie. She
has Spencer Gift, glow-in-the-dark stars on her.
I think it's adorable.
Sleep thing.
Yeah.
I love that little touch.
She seems really disoriented. She tries to attack Greta. Does she try to attack her at first or no?
No, at first she's just like, this makes no sense.
She
couldn't have made a mistake like this. We're too far, of course.
Yeah, she seems really upset and they sedate her and they put her back and they're like, don't worry, she'll be fine. Later that day or that night, they're like hanging out at the bar, like extremely stylish bar inside this
spaceship. It was a lot of fun.
And she shows up in like the tiniest sequence dress.
Right.
And they're talking about it. And I think... I don't know. No, it's not at that point that she reveals how far, of course, they've gone,
No.
It's later. Then they have this absolutely insane, like, Cinemax sex scene
that goes on
forever.
This one isn't as gratuitous because I feel like it fits. It's supposed to be in the story.
It does. But it's also just like...
She pours champagne on her boobs.
All over herself, yeah.
Right.
So...
But then after the sex, she reveals how far,
after
of course,
the sex, they... Yeah. And they're very, like, she's never going to get home.
Right. The home, subjectively, it's like a couple months for them, but it's been years. So like...
Like hundreds of years.
Even if they did get home, it wouldn't be the planet that they left.
Right. That alone would have been like so freaky.
Right, right, right. And...
But wait, there's more.
They try to wake her, Susie, up again.
They try to wake her up
she
again.
She freaks out again. She freaks says, out. Look at her. Look at Greta. She's
it's
looking
It's not
her.
Right. How could she be here?
Right, right, right.
And tries to attack her.
Right.
They sedate her again.
Yeah.
They put her back. And then they're shown together later in bed again.
Right. Yeah, right.
And at that point, I think he realizes, like, something's up.
Yeah.
This is not real. Like, are we in a simulation? Right. Like, what's happening?
But she says yes. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I find brilliant about it. Because I've seen it twice, and the second time was a totally different experience from the first time. She says, yes, you are an experience. You're still in your sleep pod. Mm-hmm. I'm taking care of you. And he says, like, where are we really? What really happened? And she's like, you're not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
And she's like crying. And
she's like, I do care about you. Yeah. I care about all the lost souls.
Yeah.
Which is so like creepy, but I believe her.
Yeah.
Because she's that thing that we see at the end. She's like a psychic manifestation of this thing. Cause I guess they can control them with like kinetic powers or whatever.
She does show him the truth.
Yeah. And because she's crying. She's like, you're not ready to see this. Please, like, don't make me show you. And he's like, I want to know.
It's very scary.
It's so scary.
Right.
So then he wakes up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he sees. And first of all, he is a nightmare himself.
He looks like he's half dead.
He's got like gaunt his and clothes are hanging off him. They're shreds, rags.
He's super thin, like he's
like,
starved.
Like a skeleton, like his hips and like his... Like, like a true skeleton, like real pictures of starvation. It's like horrible. Yeah. And then he looks at his companions, and
they're
they're both dead, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like one of them has been long dead. I think the other guy that we never saw wake up had died. He died a while back.
Yeah.
And then Susie is now, I guess, succumbed to starvation.
Mm-hmm.
They're dying of starvation.
Yeah.
Because they're unconscious.
Yeah.
And then he sees this like horrific, like spidery.
And they do this amazing effect where it looks like the shape, the outline of a woman's body.
Mm-hmm.
You see like what looks like breasts and legs. But then as it comes into the light, it's a spider, and what look like breasts and hips is the contours of the spider's thorax.
Right.
So it's this brilliant trick where it's like it looks like a female body and then it's a spider.
Yeah. And it's like a hellscape. It's like
everything is, and there's webs everywhere.
Webs everywhere, and there's ships everywhere.
Yeah.
There's like more ships.
Yeah.
And then the next scene is he's waking up from the sleep pod again.
And they're doing it again.
And I think they'll do it until he dies of starvation.
Yeah.
But they're not, but the thing about this is like they're not eating the bodies.
No.
So like I really do feel
she's lonely.
Like she wants to keep them, and there's nothing she can do. Like I don't see her as a villain at all. Like she's this crazy scary monster, but like she can't send them home.
Right.
And you get from the short that many other ships because of this fault in the program, this error, have ended up there. And because it's like momentary in our time, we're not realizing that there's a glitch in this programming. And so all these ships just keep ending up there, and there's no way to fix it, which is so scary to me.
It's scary. The first time I was more scared, and the second time I more felt for the character. You know, you get the feeling as you're watching it that something's amiss, that he's being lured into a trap because, like, this beautiful woman that he knew is there. But watching it again after having seen it, you feel like she really is just lonely. She picked Greta out of his brain to come up with something that would be pleasing for him to look at.
Right.
And she also doesn't lie. Like, she's trying to tell him the truth, but slowly, right? So it's
like,
really interesting.
Because, like, what good would come of it? He's not going to live.
Right.
There's no way.
So
give him something nice until he dies.
Yeah,
it's kind
exactly.
of like what she's thinking. Also, do you think he had sex with her? Or is that just completely in his mind?
I think it's completely in his mind.
It has to be, right?
But I think she gets something out of it.
I think so. I think she's getting
intimacy. I think she's genuinely crying.
I think so too. Yeah.
It reminded me of like some Doctor Who episodes where like the monster's just alone and doesn't want anything but some sort of companionship.
That's
a really good one.
It gave me the weirdest feeling, this one, of like, God, I hope that doesn't happen to me.
I think you're good. I think you're okay.
I don't think it will. I was like, woof, I hope that doesn't happen.
Okay, the next one is Good Hunting.
Okay.
This is the one that I said looks like Miyazaki. This mm-hmm. is the one where you've got these creatures that are called Aojins. Mm-hmm. And Aojins are females, but they sort of turn into foxes. Mm-hmm. And it begins in, like, it looks like a sort of feudal... It's not clear where it is. I'm just, from like the swords they use, I'm going to say Japan. And the father and a young boy are like hunting down mm-hmm. this creature. And the boy comes into contact with the creature's daughter. And she and he's like, "You're evil, you bewitch men." And she's like, "No, the men become obsessed with us and mm-hmm. we don't do it." Like, it's a really interesting idea of like the patriarchal society is placing the blame on mm-hmm. them. And they, like she says, my mother just goes to visit them because, like, she can hear them screaming.
Right, and they're just screaming until she right. comes there to right. help them or calm them down, yeah. basically.
The father kills the mother, mm-hmm. and then the father eventually dies of old age, and we see kind of like an industrial revolution. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks like the UK.
Yeah.
And now she's gotten older. Mm-hmm. And she says it's harder for her to turn into the fox because as...
magic has left the world.
Right. As technology advances, magic leaves the world. Mm-hmm. She now is a sex worker. Mm-hmm. He starts working in engineering and trains. And mm-hmm. now it gets very steampunky. Mm-hmm. Because we go from Industrial Revolution to like steampunkiness. Mm-hmm. Like Zeppelins. And he creates... I love the fact that they use the word automata. Mm-hmm. He creates like an automata bunny, but he has to put in water so it runs on steam and yeah. then it runs around.
And like gorgeous creations, like yeah, detailed it's really animation. Beautiful looking.
And she comes to him and she tells him that she had a client that was this governor mm-hmm. and he drugged her and cut off her limbs yeah. and replaced them with machine. She mm-hmm. says something like he can only get it up for a machine.
Right. And so now her entire body is
right.
machine.
The idea of like nature versus technology and magic mm-hmm. versus science mm-hmm. are throughout this entire thing. And then she goes to him and him being this great designer, he creates a better body for her. Mm-hmm. But her body now can change into the fox. It's right. it's technology.
It's like a mecha right. fox.
He's given her the ability to do what she could do before.
And now she hunts men who prey on women.
Right. The last image, I think, is an inversion of the male gaze because mm-hmm. we see a monocle of some guy who's about to, looks like he's going to rape a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And you see her like leaping in, her reflection in his monocle mm-hmm. as she's about to leap on him and kill him.
It reminds me so much of the Catwoman saving that woman in, is it Batman Returns? It's the Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
It reminded me of that scene. This one is, it's so lush to look at. Yeah. It's so beautiful. And really grotesque, like, the villain, the guy who does this to her, it's like a horrible, like grotesque body, and he like yeah. he's drawn you know, like warts and all, and then like the surgery that they're doing. Yeah, I mean,
of course
you almost see it.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
So and then the surgery is so horrible. And you were saying, like, I don't know if this is feminist or not, mm-hmm. or like fetishizing.
Right.
I saw it as like really post-colonial and anti-colonial.
Yeah.
Because anybody who's like enacting, with the exception of his father, like anybody who's enacting violence
yeah.
is like a colonist. Like they're all white. And
right, right.
The main character like saves her from some guys yeah. who are harassing her earlier in the yes. story. And then when she's targeting the people who are like abusing and harassing women, and they're all like Asian women, she's targeting like these white men who are attacking them.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like a vein in the story. And then the yeah. author, he has an anthology, and I don't know if this is where Good Hunting comes from, but it's called Silk Punk, mm-hmm. which I thought was really cool.
Wait, that's the name of the anthology?
Yeah. Where his short stories are compiled in this thing called this book called Silk Punk, and it's like East Asian steampunk stories.
Okay.
Which is really, really cool.
I like it.
Ken Liu.
Okay. It was a good story.
This was found in the paper menagerie.
Okay. This is a really good story. And I guess this is one of the longer ones.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The next one up is The Dump.
I thought this one wasn't. I mean, it was fine. It's
short. Stupid. It's stupid. It's basically a guy lives in a dump. He kind of has a
dick cartoon.
Yeah, there's a lot of dick in this one. Basically, we could go through this quick. Guy lives in a dump. He's sort of it's sort of Pixar-y, but it's sort of grotesque. It reminds me of the Ronald Reagan mask from the Sledgehammer video. To make a really particular specific reference. And basically
it reminds me of like Preacher covers. Yeah, or like, yeah. Like the really gross characters, like the guy who has sex with all the meat. Or like our space. It's like you see every vein, every like crease in their faces.
I actually never read Preacher.
Oh no?
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay.
But it's a product of its time.
Sure.
Looking back now, I'm like, ooh. Yeah. No, I do like it though. Yeah, it reminds me of the it's like very visceral.
Yeah. There's a scene where you see a cockroach humping a vibrator in the junk. Yeah, like there's a junk monster. The junk becomes a monster.
Yeah, but it's like his dog.
Yeah, part of me wants to read it as like capitalism and consumption coming back, but I don't even think it's that smart. It's just
right. Like the government's coming to like take away the land. Is it the government? It is.
Yeah, the government's coming
to take away the land. They want to get rid of the dump.
He doesn't want to go.
And then when in the flashback, when he's telling him about the junkyard monster, his friend is telling him, "Oh, you should go to this place. They have like the best women." He's like, "I don't have to go anywhere because everything comes to me eventually."
In
the dump.
Right. Yeah, I guess there's something there.
Yeah.
It's not one of the best ones.
Sure. But it's cool to look at. It's a different animation style.
Yeah. Shapeshifters is another photorealistic one.
This is like a video game I'd love to play.
Yeah, this is werewolves working for the American military, American Marines. Did they say where it is? Is it Iraq or Afghanistan?
I thought it was Afghanistan, but I'm not 100%.
I'm not sure. It's certainly that long war.
Yeah.
And they deal with like some werewolf racism. People call them dogs, and they walk around. They're in military garb, but they don't have shoes. They walk around feet, and they can smell out things.
Yeah, and they're like they don't go in the convoys. They like walk behind or ahead of them. They don't need to.
Right.
Because they have so much stamina.
Right.
But I like that little thing of like I joined the military because I wanted to serve.
Right.
Like,
and they still treat them like shit.
Yeah.
There's a cute thing that both the werewolf guys, they're like good friends, and they're like they touch heads
like wolves.
Yeah,
it's really cute.
It's pretty cute.
I like that.
There we find out that there is on the other side of the conflict a werewolf, and he kills the friend of the main protagonist.
Well, that scene is like a video game because it's like first person shooter looking.
And then he sniffs out the guy when he's with the rest of the crew, but he doesn't want them to get it. He wants to get him himself.
Mm-hmm.
So at night, he naked.
Yeah.
We actually don't see his dick.
Right.
He goes out. And
I wanted to.
He goes out and goes into the desert and sees the old man who is the werewolf that attacked his friend. And there's a cool transition here where instead of them becoming a wolf, it's like the wolf is inside them. They grow a little bit.
He rips off his own skin, right?
He rips off his own face and throws it like the wolf is underneath them. And then they have a pretty brutal fight.
How do you go back?
Yeah.
It's like grow back the skin.
Yeah. They have a pretty brutal fight.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, somebody above him mocks him again, and he leaves, and he says, "I'm not fighting for you anymore," and he takes his friend's body and goes and buries it.
Yeah. I thought they were going to do something with dog tags there.
One of the symbols at the beginning of the episode
is a dog tag
and a crescent moon. Dog tag X crescent moon.
Okay.
Military stories usually don't do anything for me because, you know, it's this very obvious aesthetic and war usually isn't interesting to me, and is always very archetypal guys. There's always like the mean guy, you know, like there's But it was an interesting story. I loved the connection between the two guys.
I liked that connection. I liked the tenderness of their friendship, and I liked it in juxtaposition of like the like hyper masculinity of the military. But yeah. more than that, I love when things like magical things are treated very pragmatically.
Yeah.
So I loved like what would it be like if a werewolf was real and they were in the military? Like what do
Right.
You know, like what are the practical things that would have happened if that were the case?
Yeah.
And I like that this short really kind of explores that. I'd love to see more of that.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be a great video game.
It would. It totally would.
Okay, the next short is called Helping Hand. This is This one's pretty short. It's a lot like the film Gravity.
Very much so.
But also like the film 127 Hours.
Did Anthony ever tell you when we went to go see Gravity?
No.
Okay. So at the time, and I don't think they do this anymore for this reason, the restaurant chain Chili's, you might have heard of, they did their margaritas. They would serve to you in like a shaker. So you'd order one margarita, but really you'd get like 2.5 margaritas. And I had two of those.
So you had like margaritas.
Five margaritas.
Sure.
And then we went to see Gravity and I was wasted, and it was the absolute worst movie to see when you're drunk.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
And so Anthony's like, my only memory of the film Gravity is you like pressed up against your chair with your arms out on me and Bill going, oh my God, Gravity. Oh my God.
Because, you know, it's funny, despite the title, very little gravity.
Very little. Movie. Spoiler alert, some at the end.
A little bit. Really false advertising. So this is this one's very tense. This is a woman. She's an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
She's on a spacewalk. She's fixing something on a satellite. Mm-hmm. A errant screw.
Yeah, it's always one little tiny thing. And there's so much space junk.
Yeah, cuts through her suit.
How do we even get up there? Like, really?
Yeah.
How are we not obliterated by like a...
There is
Bell Atlantic satellite that's out of commission.
Yeah. And she's going to die. She gets thrown off. She's not tethered or anything. So right. She gets thrown off the thing, and she's also running out of oxygen.
Right. And they're like, we'll come get you, like the nearest space station, but she's not going to have enough time.
Right. So.
And this is so photorealistic. It's scary. Yeah, like any still that I saw from this, I thought was a photograph of like a woman.
Right. Yeah, some of them are so photorealistic that you're like, is this an animation? Right.
Yeah.
Eventually, she what does she do?
She takes off her glove and her hand immediately like curls up and freezes.
Right.
And she screams.
Which is that what really happens?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask somebody.
She screams in pain.
Yeah.
Which is,
it looks like her arm immediately dies.
Right.
Because it's exposed to space.
And then she throws the glove. And by throwing something, it creates some sort of projection.
I'm not going to use the right term, probably, but like inertia?
Yeah,
like
it makes her move.
It projects
her. She has to have something to throw to move towards it.
This is an audio medium, but Mike and I are like throwing our arms in a way
imagine,
that really...
imagine it's really illustrative.
It really helps. the description.
This one's actually very tense. This one made me
so tense.
Because this one, you're like, what would I do? What would I do?
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't be in space. We've covered this.
I wouldn't be there
in the first place, dummy.
As R. Kelly said, use your brains. She misses.
All he had to do was believe he could fly. He didn't have to go.
Perfect. She misses, so she's fucked again. So then she rips off her own dead arm.
And just the cracking noise. It was like the sound design in a lot. That's something we didn't talk about, but the sound design in a lot of these is like great. And like this one is skin crawling.
It's bananas.
So bad.
I've got a theory, and this this theory began with me watching Buffy. When we see women do super heroic things, they suffer more pain than male heroes.
Mm.
Male heroes they go through triumphs in the sort of Herculean tasks. But think about like Buffy and all, like how much she gets her ass kicked. And in Buffy the movie, she feels menstrual cramps when vampires are near.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? And this woman just goes through so much pain.
Mm.
And she makes it in the end.
She does make it. She throws her arm.
Right.
A helping hand.
Yeah.
Love that.
Part of me thought that we were going to see her in the end, like with no limbs. Which would have been, if it were an old Tales from the Crypt episode, that would have been the little button at the end. But it wasn't that.
Mm.
But
I also like at the end, she's like, I'm okay. You don't have to come get me.
Yeah.
Don't worry about me.
She's Irish. She got red hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wrapping up her little stuff.
The next one would be a great screensaver. It's called Fish Night. And God, it's pointless. God, it's pointless.
It's beautiful. It's like cel shaded, I think, is the type of animation.
Yeah. It looks very like Flash. Like Flash animation.
Flash animation, yeah. So it's like sales.
Two sales guys. By the way,
father and son.
I thought they were an old man and a young man.
I thought
he calls them son a lot.
But I think it's father and son.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is the Willy Loman Death of a Salesman, door-to-door salesman archetype meaningful anymore in our culture?
Well, I got a door-to-door salesman for cable television.
Fuck you. You did not.
Yesterday.
That is...
Yeah. No, 2 days ago. 2 days ago.
Was he bewildered?
He was older. Oh, my God. No, it made me the saddest in the whole world. It was like two older guys, and they were working for Spectrum, and they were selling cable door-to-door. And I was like... Like, cable's going to be obsolete maybe within our lifetime.
I really hope you didn't say that to them.
I didn't. But we were like, oh, it's okay. We have stuff. It's fine. Like, we try to be as nice as possible because it's a shitty job. It's not a good job.
I don't even know that job still. I was asking myself, does this job still exist as such?
Yeah, it's always like energy or cable or like it's weird.
But they look like they're selling like trinkets.
Yeah.
They really have like a Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
I know. And it just makes me think of like the Gil character from The Simpsons. Like, the wolf's at old Gil's door. Really needs this sale. Yeah. And I'm always like, oh, I get like.
Yeah, the old man's
tugging at my collar, like so uncomfortable and sad.
Yeah.
But in any event, sales people still exist.
He says to the young man, you know, this desert, because they get trapped in the desert because their car breaks down.
They have a station wagon. And if you don't drive a station wagon, I don't think your car ever breaks down. But if you drive a station wagon, your car almost always breaks down, I think.
That's the rule of movies. And if there's a killer chasing you, the engine won't turn for
it won't. Yeah.
There's
if
no killer
you even
in this.
Get it into the
except
ignition.
Except for like a killer shark. bam. So the guy says, this was all under the ocean once.
Yeah.
And then at night, you see these iridescent sort of neon fish swimming through.
They talk about ghosts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, we always talk about like ghosts of people haunting places. But what about like the ghosts of the creatures that used to be here before?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we have like dinosaur ghosts, right? Or like coelacanth ghosts? Yeah. Well,
and it's
guess
beautiful.
What? It's really pretty.
It's beautiful, but it would be a great screensaver, not a good
And then the
short.
Sun goes swimming. He like jumps into the air. Which is like the ocean now.
And then he gets eaten by a shark.
And then a shark comes out of nowhere and eats
which,
him.
Which, I guess, at first the
How's
fish goes through
him. How's he
going
to explain that to
him?
His wife? Like,
yeah, honey, sit down.
Well, when he's on the ground, the fish go through you. But if you jump in with them, then you can interact with them.
Yeah, because he starts glowing too.
Yeah,
and
he
then
starts to glow. And then he can like affect the fish because he's like swiping his hand and they're swimming away from him. And the shark comes.
It's pretty fucking pointless.
I mean, it really like vilifies sharks.
I know.
They're
honestly,
not killing machines.
The shark
Mike.
PR is.
Who does their PR?
I don't know. So the most pointless is now followed by the most boring. And we haven't disagreed yet. I'm waiting for the point where we disagree on something.
Okay,
and I'm
let's
excited
see.
For it.
Yeah.
Maybe this is it. Lucky
Hold
13.
The tension. I love this one.
Lucky 13. Are you just saying that so you can
no,
create
it's,
tension
this is
here?
No, it's the Samira Wiley one, right?
Yes.
I love this one.
This one bores me
I
to tears.
I love this one.
All right, what is it about?
Okay, so Samira Wiley is a pilot.
From Orange is the New Black.
Yes. And this is
another
one.
And this is
one.
So photorealistic.
It's so photorealistic.
I literally was like, is this?
Samira Wiley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't even, honestly.
It doesn't even need to be animated.
It feels like they were like, you've got to be animated to be on this show.
Yeah. So I almost kind of felt like because she's a woman of color, she gets strapped with this like shitty plane.
Right.
Right.
It's killed its crew like twice.
Because I think she says something about like being one of the only.
She's a rookie.
Right. Yeah. So she starts and there's this fabled plane, Unlucky 13.
Right.
That kills its crew. Like it comes back from two missions. Right. The plane is fine. All the crew is dead.
It's like number is a 13 in the beginning and a 13 in the end. Mm-hmm. And then the digits add up to 13.
Right. And I feel like, maybe I'm making this up. No. I feel like pilots are kind of a superstitious crew, like captains.
Yeah, yeah. She says that, too.
Yeah.
So no one wants this ship.
Right. And she gets saddled with it. And I don't know. It's something about her, like, getting to know the plane or like
she starts to have a lot of luck with
taking it on its own terms, yeah. And like treating it well. She sleeps in it in a hammock, yeah. Like they become very close, like she takes care of the, and the plane is not like sentient, it's not talking to her in any way.
Is it though?
It is though. I mean, it really is, but it's not like, I don't want to misrepresent, like,
right, it's not like
talking,
he's like to
talking
her.
To the plane, she's talking, right. To the plane. So but
the what do you call it? The mechanic at one point says they're like, every ship is alive.
Yeah. Yeah. So she starts having these really good runs,
right,
on this plane, right, to the point where it becomes like this legendary plane where it's like Lucky 13 now, where she's like air evacuating a group of soldiers and they're like, oh, it's 13, like they're coming to get us, like we're gonna be okay.
And we should say they're on another planet and they're fighting a conflict against aliens,
right. Which we don't really know really the only science of it. Fiction.
No, they don't. We don't explain, yeah, it at all. Other than like,
oh, it looks like soldiers. Like it looks.
Yeah, but if you see them there,
yeah,
and they're also on this weird planet that like it's got a ground, but you could go underneath because there's like kind of like
it seems very porous. Like very,
yeah.
There's a lot of
so boring.
I loved it. And then at the end, she like they can't get out. They're not gonna be able, yeah, to fly. So she evacuates the ship. Everyone runs away, and then she's gonna
self-destruct.
That's it. She's gonna self-destruct the ship. And she sets it on a timer and then she starts to run. And I don't know if it's only that she's not going to be out of the range of the explosion, but also that the, yeah, ship, so the ship doesn't detonate. It doesn't, right, self-destruct.
Right.
And she's out of the range of the explosion. She turns around and she says like, she doesn't want to go. Like,
yeah,
the ship doesn't want to die. But then the ship does explode and you realize it's because all the enemy soldiers had now crowded around the ship.
Right,
and
so
they were all like destroyed,
right,
by this blast. And so she did it on purpose.
Right.
I loved it. I thought it was sweet. It was great. It was a good one.
No, it wasn't. Okay. The next one is my favorite.
Yes, it was. Who's getting the final word?
And all right. So let's see how you feel about the next one. The next one's my favorite, Zima Blue.
That was your favorite.
Zima Blue is my favorite.
I liked it a lot, but I don't know if it's my favorite. I did like it. I liked it.
It's got this really interesting, mm-hmm, I feel like it's unique even amongst the others, because it's, yes, got this very modernist, sharp,
mm-hmm,
art deco-y kind, yeah, of like well-balanced compositions. It's really, it has a sort of mechanical precision, which makes sense for what it is.
Mm.
It's about this artist named Zima Blue,
mm-hmm,
who, he did portraitures, but then he was sick of that, so he started painting these big murals of outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
I mean, truly,
right,
huge,
right,
murals.
And he's like this vault. Everyone loves him.
Yeah.
And then in his murals, you start to see this like blue little square,
mm-hmm,
in the center, mm-hmm, which they call Zima Blue, like, mm-hmm, the certain shade of blue,
right?
And then
like a paint
chip, right? And as he keeps making murals, it gets bigger,
mm-hmm,
and sometimes it's a circle, sometimes it's whatever,
and then finally it's like a blue.
It's just blue
wall, yeah.
But then he starts making like gigantic blue things, like, mm-hmm, a blue like wall that like it, you think you're outside, like you think it's,
yeah,
daylight.
Some, like, of them like exceed the atmosphere of the planet,
right,
they're,
right,
on,
right.
So you see like spaceships are flying around it, but it goes down to Earth also.
Right. The protagonist of the short story is, of the short film is, someone who's going to interview him,
mm-hmm,
and she gets there and he tells a story where he went and had his body, basically he like made himself into a cyborg.
Right. Well, that was the rumor. That he got all,
right,
cyborg,
right, right,
parts.
Well, it's not clear. All right, we'll get to that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Because he wanted to be able to, without a spacesuit, go and just like hang out on other planets,
right,
and still be,
it's
able
very,
to
like,
breathe.
It's very like Dr. Manhattan.
Yes, yes. And he's like looking for something. He's looking for the meaning of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then he shows her his new project, and it's like a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got all these blue tiles on it.
Yeah.
And he tells her the story of this woman who was this sort of simple tinkerer, and she made these little robots, and,
mm-hmm,
one robot was a robot to clean her pool,
mm-hmm,
and the tiles of the pool are Zima Blue. That's what the manufacturer called that,
mm-hmm,
color. And as time went on, she kept adding more to the robot, and it got more intelligent,
mm-hmm,
and grew, and you sort of are told, or basically it's heavily implied that like he is that robot.
Right.
But the weird thing is like, was he originally a man? Because she even says like, But that doesn't make sense. Like, how could you be that robot? You started as a man. And he says, sometimes it's difficult even for me to understand what I've become, and harder still to remember what I once was. Mm-hmm. So even if he was in always the robot, or he was a man and became robotic, there's still something there. Like, maybe it's like in the code of the robot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And his final performance is everyone comes to watch his show. He goes into the pool, and when he goes into the pool, he sheds his higher functions and his
like arms jettison, his right. legs and then he's fly just off
that him. Little machine cleaning the
and
pool.
And he cleans the pool. Because he said he was never happier.
Or right. Because like, he was looking for meaning in the cosmos, mm-hmm. and he found it in just that simple task of cleaning the
right,
pool.
Right, and doing it well. Like, he wanted to do the job right. well.
And I don't know why that spoke to me. This one spoke to me yeah. so deeply.
And it made me think it's the most well-reviewed one that I've seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people love Z-Mobile. I like it. I do really like it a lot. I don't want to be dismissive of it, because I really did enjoy it.
I love, I don't know, I love something, like, one of my favorite books from the last few years is this, not a lot of people talk about it, it's called The Hike, and it's about a guy who's on a work trip, and he goes on a hike, and then, like, he just has this weird odyssey where he meets dogs with people faces and a talking crab, and he goes to hell, and the devil makes him make him a castle, and he's, like, he's got, like, one tool, and he takes hundreds of years to do it.
Okay.
And then in the end, he comes back home, and it's like, I'm not a religious person, but there's something like religious to me about the book of like, I get more out of that book than anything else in terms of like, this makes sense to me. Mm. And I'm not saying like work is what's important, but something about the little robots need to just clean the pool, and that's what keeps it going.
Right.
Speaks to me deeply.
Like his driving force.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It was my favorite. It also made me think of the Sigma.
Or like a job well done is a reward in itself.
Yeah. Or just like having a task. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, say, like, people die when they retire, that you die younger if you retire. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it makes me think of me. Like, I feel like I would shrivel and die if I didn't teach.
Well, they say the best retirement plan is to have a life you don't want to retire from.
Exactly. I'm going to die in front of a classroom. I've accepted this. I'll just keel over. It reminds me a little bit of...
And then the legend of the ghost professor would really live.
Oh my God, finally. I just going to say this one pretentious thing fast. It reminds me of Sigmund Freud's Beyond the Pleasure Principle, which is where the idea of the death drive comes from. Mm-hmm. The idea that we are drawn towards death. But as Freud put it, it's like we're... My read of it is like we're drawn towards being inanimate.
Mm.
So anyway.
So you think he did start as a man? Because I
think he did. But I think when he then became a cyborg, those cybernetic parts
like took over.
Yeah. And I think they had their ancestry was that machine.
Hmm. Okay.
But I don't know. It's very open ended.
It reminded me of the Robin Williams movie Bicentennial Man.
Yes. The greatest sci-fi tale. The greatest sci-fi yarn ever.
He goes the opposite direction in that one. Like, he gets more and more human parts until he can become human. And then he like artificially dies.
Yeah. In this, he's like, he wants to be more simple.
Honestly, there's something to that movie. There's like,
I kind of want to revisit it. I haven't seen it in like
20 years, I want to say.
Probably
the year it came out was the last time I saw it.
Okay.
One of my favorite movies.
There's only three more guys, all right? So settle in. We got this. This is not a mini-sode. The next one is called Blind Spot. And this one's just fun. It's got the aesthetic of like a Saturday morning or like an 80s Saturday morning cartoon or like an 80s after school cartoon.
Wait, Blind Spot.
This is the one where it's like they're just three robots and they're like chasing after.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I like this one.
It's very, very like 80s.
Wait, there could be three more.
One, two, three. Oh, four more.
Okay.
My bad.
So, yeah, all right, Blind Spot.
This one's very simple. It doesn't ask you to say anything.
No,
it's
anything. Heist.
Yeah, it's very just fun. The one of the guys looks like one of the mutants from Dark Knight Returns. Mm. He's got like that weird like visor. Mm. It's just super fun. I wish it were a Saturday morning cartoon that I could watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a little too violent for kids, but I enjoy it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Because some of the kills are like pretty rough.
When I was a little kid, I watched Shoah for fun.
What's Shoah?
It's like a 9-hour documentary about the Holocaust.
Oh my God. Did you really?
No, I didn't. Someone out there laughed. Let's move on beyond.
It's a good joke when you have to explain it to the person.
That's always the best joke. It's fun. There's nothing more to say about it.
Showa?
Yeah. Nope. Nope. Not Showa. Not at all. Oh, boy.
We're getting canceled.
Spotify's going to be like, I don't know what the fuck you think you're doing.
We're not funding this podcast any longer.
So the next one is called Ice Age. And this one's mostly live action.
Yeah. This is the only one.
And this one's cute. First of all, I have to say Simpsons did it.
Yeah.
Simpsons did it.
Yeah, Simpsons did it. This is Lisa's science project in Treehouse of Horror.
Oh, eight? I don't know. Which one of them? I don't know. One of the earlier ones.
Five or eight, I want to say.
Yeah, you got...
Yeah.
Mary
Elizabeth Winstead. Yeah. Topher Grace.
Yeah.
They move into a new apartment. They have an old fridge.
Yeah.
They plug it in, I guess.
Yeah.
Open it up.
Yeah.
And it's the Ice Age. There it is.
In a little ice cube, you see... Yeah.
A mastodon.
Yeah, but he's a little spears in his side.
So cute.
And then you see every time they look, it's like their time is the time inside the little civilization mm-hmm. is moving faster.
So
like,
accelerated.
So as they're watching, they're seeing them. Like they come away for 10 minutes and they come back, and now they're like in the
Renaissance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love that though. They like go have coffee and they come back. They're like, oh, the Renaissance. Like they're kind of proud of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And meanwhile, to the people in the little world, like they just see their stupid faces.
Yeah.
You know, hundreds of years, because as they're looking,
yeah, and they like comment about it, like when they're at the point where they're building skyscrapers, like look at these jackasses.
Again, it's predictable. Some of these are very predictable.
Yeah,
they have eventually
war, they annihilate
kill themselves. But then they
start all over again.
No. Before they start,
they leave.
Yeah, they go to space, and that's a very pretty scene.
Yeah,
it's like you see like them like sort of flying all around their apartment, and then the next morning, they're back at the dawn of man.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a problem with this.
Okay.
Which is, you get the idea that what you're seeing inside the mm-hmm. fridge is like a replication of our history.
Mm-hmm.
But you see dinosaurs and early man together.
Mm-hmm.
And
what are you talking about? That is our history. Haven't you ever been to the Creation Museum?
The world is 6,000 years old. Yeah. My bad. And we put saddles on dinosaurs so we can ride them.
We rode them. It was the Flintstones is a documentary.
Right. My bad. You know what? No criticisms.
Fruity Pebbles still around, Mike, and it's still the best cereal.
I stand corrected. I have no criticisms of Ice Age. Oh, this one is the one. I hate this one. This is my least favorite one. Alternate histories.
Oh, really? Okay. It's just, it's like a nothing one.
It's short.
It's like it should be an app.
Hitler. It's like...
Weirdly gratuitous nudity in this one.
It also, I think it doesn't understand its own premise. Like, it's supposed to be like... It's an advertisement for, like, a place where you can go and see alternative... Like, if things change in history, what would happen? And it's like, what if Hitler died at a different date?
Mm-hmm.
If Hitler died at this date, here are six alternatives of what would happen.
Yeah.
But instead of, like, showing you, like, how his death would make things different, like, he dies in different weird ways. Like, he gets stuck in Jell-O. It, like...
Like, really stupid ways.
It tried to be cute, but it was, like, stupid.
The animation was cute.
Yeah.
It's like really like round little simple shapes.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't for me. And the last one is The Secret War.
Another one that's like a PS4 game.
Yes. And this one is, I guess it's during, they say something about Stalingrad. So I guess it's during World War I.
Okay.
And they are, it is, because they say like they have no help. He says something like there's darkness on every side of us.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are on a special mission fighting. This actually was a lot like the video game Doom. They're on a special mission.
Or like Hellboy in Russia.
Yes. Fighting these hell beasts mm-hmm. that are coming out of the ground and fighting them. And again, because of the military thing, it wasn't my favorite. It would be a super fun game.
I like the other military one better. Because it was more of like a human story. Yeah, even though this one had like a father and son.
But we don't even know it's the son until the very end.
Until the end. Yeah. He like rides away on the little pony.
Yeah. And they know they're not going to live. So they make a last stand.
Yeah.
It's actually, in some ways, it's a lot story-wise like the one with the farmers.
Yeah.
Like it just...
But this is like much darker.
Right. Much more photorealistic.
And like very gory.
Very gory. Yeah, I didn't love this one either.
I think they kind of, in this order anyway, they kind of went out on a mm-hmm. note. Where I wasn't like too sad to see it go.
Yeah.
Like they didn't go out.
Yeah.
At the highest point they could have, I think. Yeah, no, I did. I mean, it looked really good.
Yeah.
And it was exciting, but other than that.
Before we wrap up, I want to know your favorites.
My favorites?
What's your, like, absolute favorite?
You know, Akilah Rift, at the time I watched it, I was like, oh, okay. And then I couldn't get it out of my head. It was okay. Like, I was having nightmares about this thing. In a good way. Like, I thought it was so interesting. I loved Suits. I loved the way it looked.
Yeah.
I loved the story. I thought it was really cute.
All right, what do you hate? What's, like, the worst
one? The Witness. I thought The Witness was, like, nothing. Yeah, there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
Fish Night, I liked the way it looked, but I also didn't think there was, like, much of a story. Anything that there wasn't much of a story, I was like, oh. Like, yeah. I loved Good Hunting. I loved that one. I thought the story was there.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
What are your favorites?
They run the gamut of, like, some are light on story, some are heavy on story, some are
like, The Dump is probably my least favorite, because, like, I didn't think it was great to look at. I mean, it was obviously a lot of skill went into it.
It looks good,
but it just wasn't my favorite to look at necessarily, right. And there was, like, zero story.
It doesn't get, you don't get much from it, whereas, like, I think I've watched Beyond the Akilah Rift twice. Mm-hmm. I bet if I keep watching, I'll get more.
Get more from it, yeah, absolutely.
Whereas The Dump is just, like, it's just a dump. Yeah. If it weren't so violent, it would be a Pixar short before a feature-length Pixar movie. Mm-hmm. Are they doing another season?
I think so. It's Fincher, right? It's David Fincher.
And it's Fincher and the director of the first Deadpool movie.
Okay. I'm interested in it.
I hope they do.
Did you watch The Animatrix?
Yes.
Okay. I only watched some of it, but it reminded me of that.
Yes. You know what reminded me of? And this is something you got me into, like, 15 years ago. Ian Flux.
Yeah.
Ian Flux was... Ian Flux was part of Liquid Television, mm-hmm. which was an MTV late night... it's also where Beavis and Butthead comes from. It mm-hmm. was, like, just cartoon shorts. It's Tim Miller and David Fincher. Tim Miller is the creator. It actually started as a reboot of the classic anthology Heavy Metal. And then they were like, let's just brand it our own thing.
Let's do our own thing. Yeah. It's smarter, I think.
Yeah. I mean, they rebooted Heavy Metal a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So I liked it. I liked that there wasn't a necessity to make them all half hour. It was just this will be as long as it needs to be.
Yeah. I felt what I really liked about it was I felt like they gave the artists kind of free rein to do what they wanted.
Yes. And they
They wanted. Yeah, they sure did. To tell the stories they wanted. I love sci-fi. I love short sci-fi. I love, like, the variety that you got from this. I like that they didn't necessarily keep to the theme of love, death, and robots.
No, it was basically by calling it that,
it's like you're just gonna get whatever thrown at you right now and get ready.
Right, exactly.
And this is not even all sci-fi. It's, like, speculative.
Yeah, the vampire story is not sci-fi, really.
Or even, like, Ice Age. It's, like, it's kind of like a little Twilight Zone.
Yeah. A lot of people love Black Mirror. And I watched, like, the first two seasons, but I wasn't drawn back into watching it. I haven't kept up with it.
Did you watch the USS Callister episode?
That's the one that's, like, a Star Trek pastiche. I haven't watched that one.
I would say that one's worth watching. I dive in and, like, I'll pick and choose. I haven't watched the entire series of Black Mirror. But it's another one. I do like sci-fi.
So. But those are, again, they're longer. Not that I have no patience, but this was, like, so enjoyable. And I love animation. It was beautiful. Mm. I do hope they make more of these.
Me too.
I'm trying to find a book that I read that I want to recommend to you and the readers.
I know you don't like narrative podcasts, right? Like, you don't.
I know.
Well, if anyone listening does, LeVar Burton Reads, the same LeVar Burton you know and love from Reading Rainbow, does, I want to say adult stories, but that makes it sound like smutty, but they're just, like, fictional.
It's not, like, about butterflies.
Yeah. It's speculative and science fiction short stories that he reads in his extremely calming voice. And they're really, like, he picks some great ones. He just has incredible taste in stories. And they're not all speculative or sci-fi, but he does focus on that because that's what he's interested in.
And he's Jordy LaForge.
He is Jordy LaForge. So his most recent one was a First Contact story, and it was good. It was really good. I actually saw it live, and it was the most relaxing live show I've ever been to because
amazing.
He has musical accompaniment when he does the live shows, and for every episode, he says, like, let's take a breath. And then he, like, does, like, a big, like, breath in. And
does
he
give you ASMR?
Not so much, but it does relax me. And they did it at the show. So the whole audience took, like, a big breath. And I looked around at one point, and people were just, like, they had their eyes shut because they were just focusing on, like, his voice and the story. So everyone walked out of there. It was just, like, ooh, so nice and calm. We just heard this, like, beautiful story.
That sounds lovely.
It was really nice.
My recommendation to you and to the reader, book of short stories called Resist, mm-hmm. Tales from a Future Worth Fighting Against. All proceeds go to the ACLU.
Oh, wow.
And it's all of these stories that are born out of the hellscape that we're currently living in. And they're not directly about, like, Trump, but they're born in a world where Trump is the president. And there's a lot of great ones. There's actually a really good one that Lucky 13 reminded me of, where it's a war, but they have sentient ships, and, like, both sides can't shoot the other because the ships decide to stop the war. Like, the ships won't fight each other. Mm-hmm. So the people, it's, so that's, if you like sci-fi, go for that. Well, this has been a long episode. Well, Janine,
it's never brief when you and I get to gabbing.
Janine, this has all been a simulation. You are still in your sleep pod.
I'm going to my sleep pod.
This has not been. I am a spider.
Oh my God.
You're listening to the Spider Podcast by an evil spider. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. Today, I was joined by Janine Gagliardi. We talked about sci-fi. Let's go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye. Go bye-bye.